the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 441790. You can send a WhatsApp to 253-4679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought to an association with our good friends at ASF White Rum, the best shot of the day.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, all you can qualify to sing this song. Tell the bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, we're back to a regular time of 6:15, of course, because of the budget and the reply by Ralph Thorne last week. We started at 8:30, and no doubt you're happy to be back at your regular time, a time that you know very well. So many things happening in cricket. I understand that Shane Durridge is actually retired again, but he's retired as a keeper. But will continue as a batsman. That's interesting. As you know, he retired as an international cricketer, played a couple of matches for the Barbados team, and now has said he's retiring as a keeper, but wants to continue as a batsman. So we see what will happen as far as that is concerned. My understanding is that the selectors are meeting tonight to actually pick a keeper, and the names I'm hearing: Rivaldo Clark, Tyrone Gibson, and Demetrius Richards. So one of them will get the pick. Many are called, but few are chosen. I can also tell that Jason Holder is going to play cricket in England for Worcester. And so he's not going to be playing for the Barbados team anymore. He played in a couple of matches, of course, trying to get ready to hopefully be selected for England. That tour is going to take place just after the World Cup. So, Jason Holder going to play some cricket in England, the county circuit. Congratulations to Jamaica for winning in terms of the women, 50 over and T20 Blaze. Well, I imagine that when you consider the top players that they had, they had to be more than odds-on favourites to win. And the situation is that they won the championship 50 over and T20 Blades. Well, of course, we're going to leave this one for the last. Sir Charles Griffith, well, it was absolutely magnificent. There's no doubt about that. Absolutely magnificent. You know, the what happened to him yesterday at Kensington Oval, and that statue being unveiled. And, of course, we had the Prime Minister making a beautiful speech. And, of course, we also heard from Sir Charles Griffith as well. And the local season starts on April the 7th. So Stephen Leslie actually making that announcement. But without any further ado, we've got a panel tonight. We've got the CEO of Cricket West Indies. Of course, we're talking about Johnny Grave and Miles Bascombe. Is he with us? Or he's joined us as well. He's the director of cricket. A little bit later on, Dr. Kishore Shallow joins us at 7 o'clock. So an evening with Cricket West Indies. And without any further ado, I'm going to go to Johnny Grave, the CEO, and say hello to him. Hello, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Andrew. Good evening.
Right. And Miles Bascombe, how are you, Miles?
I'm not bad. Thank you, Andrew, and good evening to you and your listeners.
Good. Wonderful. We're going to be joined with the president of Cricket West Indies, Dr. Shallow, at the top of the hour. We also want to get some reaction, of course, from some noted journalists across the Caribbean. So we're going to look at that pretty soon. But let's start with you, Johnny. The World Cup, any update for us? Things are going well. Of course, the World Cup is going to be from June the 1st to the 29th. Any concerns? Everything is on target, Johnny?
Yeah, no, it's getting exciting now. It's not long to go. We're busy on all fronts, really. Most of the teams have now confirmed their arrival dates and we're working through their warm-up schedules. Many teams are looking to also come either into the United States or the Caribbean early to start their preparation. We're almost there in terms of finalising our team's preparation, and many people have seen the announcement that the IPL have now confirmed the schedule all the way up to the final on the 26th of May. So obviously from a planning perspective of knowing when IPL players may return to the region, depending on the progress of their respective franchise, you know, all of that is good information and allowing us to sort of go forward with very, very detailed plans now. And tickets are still on sale and, you know, demand is high and strong. So, things are going well. Thank you.
Any concerns? Johnny, any concerns?
No, not at this stage, no.
Okay. All right. Miles Bascom, good to have you on the show. How are you doing, sir? You doing okay?
Yes, apart from having left my computer on a Caribbean Airlines flight a short while ago.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty good, yes.
Oh, that's so sad, yes. So sad. What happened? What were you thinking?
I'm hopeful that, I was walking.
Oh.
I was walking and, you know, we had a bit of a delay. There's been some cloud cover, a lot of rain in Antigua today, as you would know.
Right.
Based on the fact that the under-15s didn't get going.
I see.
So that visibility issue delayed the flight out of St. Kitts.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So I took the opportunity to get some work done and left my laptop there.
Okay. Have you made any contact since you've arrived back in St. Vincent? You're in St. Vincent, are you?
In Antigua.
Oh, in Antigua. Okay, fine. So have you made any contact? I'm sure. I hope it's safe and sound because there's so much information you have in there.
Yes, the whole future of West Indies cricket is on there.
I like that. And of course, your strategic plan.
Yes,
indeed.
All right, our strategic plan, yeah.
Our strategic plan, right. All right. Well, Johnny, it's good to have you. Philo Wallace is with us. Of course, we've got Basil Butcher Jr. With us as well. And of course, Dr. Ford. Dr. Ford, let me throw it to you. Any questions for Miles or your good friend, Johnny Grave? No? Good evening to you, sir.
Hi, good night to the panel and good night to listeners. It's good to have so many members of the Cricket West Indies here, as well as our usual panelists. I guess I can talk to Miles first and ask him what have been the biggest challenges he's had since taking over as director of cricket. What are the things he identified that needed to be worked on the most?
Mm-hmm. Miles?
Well, I had a pretty good idea of the challenges that I would face. I don't think I could pinpoint any one as being bigger than the other. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of issues in terms of alignment. You know, ensuring that, you know, we have the same messages going across from CWI across to the territorial boards to ensure that we're all on the same page. So that has been one of the things that I've been trying to get right, especially relating to the franchise system and the role that it should play in our cricket system. So we embarked on some franchise visits and that was quite fruitful.
Okay. There was a time when we got the impression that white ball cricket was prioritized in the region ahead of red ball cricket. Are we going equally in all directions, or do we have a bias or focus towards any particular one?
Well, I certainly can't say what would give us that impression in terms of white ball get at least any bias from CWI's end, when we look at the franchise system and the players that are contracted, the red ball format really forms the majority of the biases weighted towards red ball cricket. So most of the persons who would have been contracted would have been players who are expected to play the majority of your first class season. A team cricket, by and large, is red ball cricket. I don't think that, at least from CWI's end, that there could be any question as to the importance of red ball cricket in our cricket system.
Johnny, from a recent meeting, it seems like the finances have improved. Can you encapsulate that improvement and give people an idea of what you've been able to achieve in the fiscal year?
Yeah, I mean, look, our annual report and the audited financial statements, certainly from a financial perspective, are much better reading from anyone's, I would have thought, analysis. We've gone from, in 2021, we had an accumulated deficit of over $23 million, and we've now got an accumulated surplus of over $12 million with a good year forecast, having hosted England in December, which falls within our financial year, and obviously a World Cup to come. So we've gone from probably our most financial analysis, financial ratios, you know, probably from insolvency to having a fairly, I wouldn't say robust at this stage, but a much better foundation for what is going to be a very good year financially again. So three on the trot, which is obviously key in terms of being able to, steady the ship coming out of two very, very difficult years in COVID, but also continue to support everything we're doing to invest in the cricket system. And make no mistake, our cricket system needs significant change and significant investment, but that can only be done on the back of solid finances. So we've had to make difficult decisions. We've tried to make good choices in how we allocate resources, but it's all come with a complete transformation of our financial systems, processes, department, and the outcome of that is much more favourable financial position now, with an even better one forecast to be by this time next year.
With a surplus of 12 million, do you have an idea of the proportions of projected spending with that surplus? Or are you going to try to maybe secure your assets, let's say the ground in Antigua, versus putting money into cricket? How do you view the using that surplus in the next year?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes we've made is we now try and articulate our financial position in the context of a four-year cycle. We expected to be north of $10 million, and we've obviously hit 12, and we're expecting to be north of $20 million by this time next year. And from my perspective, that's a minimum expectation. We want to surpass those financial goals to allow for even either more investment in the cricket system or to start to put money into financial reserves just in case we get other bumps in the road. But I think based on the four-year cycle, we need to have a significant amount of cash on our books and in the bank by the end of 2025, so by September 30th, 2025. Mm-hmm. That will get us through what we forecast to be two difficult years financially for us in 25 and 26, where we don't have any high-revenue tours and we're not hosting a Cricket World Cup like we are this year. And therefore, you know, in 2027, when we're anticipating in India to come again and then England the following year, we can use that additional revenues to continue to make the improvements. I think for me, that's the biggest change. In the past, I think West Indies cricket has used high value tours and high revenue years to sort of cover up and pay off the debt that's been accumulated. We're now about to enter probably a record revenue year in 2024, and we've got money in the bank, which is great. We're not using the finances of this World Cup to pay off money from the past. We can use it to to be a platform, as Andrew acknowledged, in terms of the new strategic plan that mm-hmm. we got approved on the weekend. So, much healthier financial position, a much more stable position, and a foundation on which to build over the next 4 years.
I see. Philo?
Hi, good evening, Andrew. Good evening, Dr. Ford. Good evening, Basil Butcher Jr. Welcome to Johnny Grave and Miles. I want to say hello to my friend Art Carlos in heaven. It's good to have Miles, actually. I've been clamoring for Miles for a very long time because I've known Miles for a long time, and we sat on committees together, which were quite fruitful. My question to Miles, and then one to Donnie. Miles, we have a World Cup on the horizon. There's no selection panels in place. Mm-hmm. Are there going to be any selection panels in place? And I say panels because there's a women's team going to Pakistan, and I saw some dates, April 6th, they're going to be in Dubai until the 14th. Who's going to select that squad? And then other panels are going to be put together. And I'm talking now for the men's panel, because there's only the most honorable Desmond Haynes. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I don't know if you're using scouts in the regional cricket. But the World Cup coming up, and that squad will have to be announced shortly. And also the squad for England as well. And for Johnny, you talk about the strategic plan. I would like to know what it is. It was approved, but what is it that was approved over mm-hmm. the weekend and the strategic plan mm-hmm. For Cricket West Indies?
Miles first. Miles?
Yeah, since I'm the opening bat. I don't think it's fair to say that there is no panel in place. The panels have basically been reduced by one. So the men's selection panel was a three-member panel that included the lead selector, the head coach, and the other selector, which was Roland Butcher. And similarly, for the women's, it was the lead selector, Anne Brown John, the head coach, and I keep forgetting his name.
Travis Dowling.
Help me, Johnny. Dowling, sorry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah, so what will happen is that the head coach and the lead selector will select those squads. In terms of the World Cup squad, that squad has been in the making, over the last number of tours that we've had. So it's not a case where they are coming to a point where they, it's just a selection just ahead of the World Cup. That has been planned and was being refined over the last number of tours. So I'm sure that at this point, it may just be a case of one or two spots that have to be solidified. And similarly, the women's team, they would have played in Australia under the new head coach, Anne Brown John, who has been with women's cricket for eons. She is very familiar with all of the players. So what we did is that we had the head coach join. Well, he took the A team to Pakistan, and that helped him to get familiar with the next line of players. And then, of course, he was looking at the regional tournaments in the regional tournament that just concluded yesterday in St. Kitts. So he is very much up to speed, and he would have already had camps. So he knows all of the players now. He knows what their potential, their capacity, and their performance coming out of this tournament. So between him and Brown John, we definitely have a very capable team that would be able to do justice to the selection of those squads.
Mm. Are you happy to have only two selectors, Miles, on a panel?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, I think that the panels as they exist now are quite capable in terms of selecting squads. the plan is for us to undertake a review. And you were a member of that review committee back in 2019. And at that time, we looked at the composition of the panel. And even then, we saw it fit to reduce the panel because the panel was at least one member larger, each one. And we saw it fit to reduce the size of the panel.
Mm.
And so the review that is upcoming will look a little bit deeper at the needs of the cricket system and the modern ways of selecting teams. I mean, team selections now are very strategic and very much linked to game strategy. Mm. And we also have to look at our scouting systems. We do not currently have a formal scouting system, right? We have traditionally had a larger selection panel where we have sent the selectors mm-hmm. to view regional tournaments and having eyes on regional matches. And, you know, in this review, we would look at whether or not that is still a viable way of looking at talent. Because if a selector goes to a regional match and sees a player that is playing for Barbados, can that selector really say that they have found new talent? Somebody in Barbados must have recognized that player is good enough to play for Barbados in the first case. So where we really need to get to are those players who, you know, may not have come through the system or they may have fell out of the system at some point and are still playing good cricket. And we need to find a way of ensuring that we can capture all of that talent. And I think this review process would really look at that in a little bit more detail.
Mm.
And I think that we have a good group at the cricket committee who can look at that critically and work out what the needs are. And I'm sure that we'll come out of that with proposals for what will be something that is quite modern and relevant in terms of how we go forward with selection.
Just before Fidel comes
in. That's really interesting.
Just before he comes in again, I know you want to comment. So I just want to confirm. So you're saying that Desmond Haynes and the head coach will pick the World Cup squad. Is that correct? I just want to confirm this.
All right.
Right. So Desmond Haynes, so you have two selectors picking the World Cup squad. I just want to confirm that.
Yes, all right.
Good. So let's assume that there's one place. My good friend, Dr. Ford. Hainsey wants Ford, but the head coach wants Graves. What will happen in that situation with two selectors?
Well, the lead selector always has the casting vote.
Okay.
In the current system.
Okay. Okay. So the lead selector is the man then. All right. Fair enough. And just before Dr. Ford comes in, the World Cup squad. When can we possibly get that? Do you have any ideas to when that team would be put together and announced? You're just about 2 months away.
I think we need to have it in 30 days before.
Okay.
So we are not in any rush. I think we are going to try to get as much information as we can get.
Mm-hmm.
So you know the IPL is going on. We have players there. So even those matches would be I'm sure would be looked at by our coach and our lead selector. So as much information as we could get before we make that final selection,
we will take.
Interesting. All right. Already people are sending their WhatsApp messages. I'll certainly come back to that. I know that Dr. Ford has got a question. I know that Basil is chomping at the bit as well, but we got to pause for business cause. Mason and guests brought in association with our good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best show of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, all you can qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, Dr. Ford.
Yeah, it's just statistically, democratically, and you know, otherwise unorthodox to have an even number of individuals and to give one individual two votes. It really logically says that you only need one individual because I don't think you need a review to see that that's kind of a flawed construct. Because there's no statistical or mathematical basis that you can rubber stamp such a arrangement. But if it works, it just works, I guess.
Mm. Miles?
There are some cases in some countries where it's just the head coach that picks his team. Mm. And if it is a case of, it is not a case where it's a vote on every position. It's a discussion about strategy and finding a consensus. And then it's a discussion about which player is the best player to fill the role. Mm. And I'm pretty sure that from my discussions with Dr. Haynes, that I don't think that they've ever had to vote on anything. Mm. So it's been a case of having very robust discussions, even ahead of the actual selection meeting about what the team wants to achieve and what are the roles and skill sets that are necessary to execute the game plans. Mm-hmm. And then a discussion around, you know, which players best suit those roles and are best able to execute those skill sets. Mm-hmm. So in most cases, I don't think it has ever come to the point where a vote has to be taken.
Mm-hmm. Basil,
Miles, I don't like the two system, the two man system. I think for the dynamics of West Indies cricket, I don't see why we should be following other people. I feel that we should set our own standards. We've had standards before. Why don't we look at some of those standards we had before and try to keep them relevant? Despite the doctor, the most former Desmond Haynes saying that maybe subject to correction that there have never been a vote, that doesn't stand strong to say you should cut the panel.
Mm.
Because discussions are healthy when you have other people involved. The two people having discussions, what are they discussing? We know what they're discussing. Two people could come and say anything. Mm. But I believe that when you have a panel where people, you have input from a third person, it gives, and that third person is a selector. It gives more muscle to the discussion. Two people in a room discussing the big 15 or 16 men, to me, is not right for West Indies cricket. Or cricket is too dynamic. Or players are too wide and scattered.
Mm.
Two guys to sit down and select.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're relying on scouts, mm-hmm. and as you said, you might rely on scouts who are biased to their own players. Because to me, you're not going to travel. These scouts are not going to travel interregional because maybe the problems are flying. But if a scout is scouting, looking at Jamaica, he's Jamaican, and watching Windwards, he may not even speak about the Windward Islands player, but there might be two or three that look good.
Mm.
So we need to be careful. The selector present, I think, a selector brings more balance. Mm-hmm. The viewing of cricket in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives the players something to look to. There's a selector watching. A scout and a selector are two different people. They carry different weight. And I'm not talking about body weight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about weight in the room to select. And that's something you need to look at very soon.
Yes, Miles.
Well, I am I'm hopeful that we are moving to a system where the players are aware and they have clarity on what skill sets are required for the role that they are vying for. Mm. And so they expect that by executing those skill sets well over time and consistently, that, I mean, it shouldn't matter whether it's a scout or a selector looking, that clarity will allow them to know that they must be in the reckoning. We've had, I think, as many as 4 selectors at one point, and there is no evidence to say that those were any better than 3 did, and there's no evidence to say that they would work better than 2 would. But I it comes back to, I think, what we want from our selection system, and hence the reason there is no decision that has been made as yet. It's a review process which will have quite a number of persons sharing their opinion, and we'll come back with something that will be proposed to the board.
Miles, in 30 seconds, ideally, how many selectors would you want personally?
Well, I wouldn't want to preempt the process. Okay. I believe that we do have a very robust cricket committee that will put forward something that we believe is workable in our system.
All right. Yes, Basil. Question.
I just want to make a quick comment regarding the women's selector, and I'm going to be frank. Anne Brong-John is the worst selector I've ever seen. I follow women's cricket more than probably anybody, casual person. I look at all women's cricket, and I got friends who are coaches like me are very, very disappointed with her role as a selector. That you don't have to comment on that. I just want to put that on the record.
Mm.
But my question to you is, regarding the trips around the region, talking to the different territorial boards. And well, I could speak for Guyana because I saw the article in the newspapers and I spoke to people in Guyana regarding that. And I want to find out how useful was that trip. Because why I ask this, our problem in West Indies cricket is at the foundation. Our club structure is decrepit. Or school cricket is decrepit, right? And if that foundation is not in place and you're not speaking to those people at that level, the challenges they face and the professionalism that is needed at that level, we'll be whistling in the wind. All we've been doing is top heavy and looking at the franchise. And for example, a place like Guyana, the Guyana Cricket Board does not develop cricketers. Guyana Cricket Board is similar to the West Indies Cricket Board, as you would know. We have 3 county boards and sub-associations. They're the ones that deal with the cricketers at the ground level, not the Guyana Cricket Board. So speaking to the Guyana Cricket Board, in my view, is not as useful. You didn't go to Barbies and speak to Barbies. You didn't speak to Darshan Cricket Association or so on and so forth. So you would be getting a very skewed message as to the challenges within Guyana per se. So I'd like you to comment on that and a follow-up on that question. In regards to territorial boards, rather hammering on this territorial board, because West Indies Cricket Board has never really addressed the real problem, which is in territorial boards, right? We have territorial boards operating in a operating in an environment today which is of a high performance professional environment, and they are a bunch of rank amateurs. How do we correct that situation?
Yes, Miles.
Okay, so the visit to the territories I was referring to was very specific to the operation of the franchise system. It was not intended to be overall health check on cricket in the territory. So there was a franchise review task force that did an assessment of the franchise system, and I think coming out of that, it was recognized that based on the investment that has been made in that system, that we are not quite seeing the returns that we would like to see. So the only shortcoming of that review was that the task force did not physically go to which was admitted in the report. And so I thought that it would be prudent on our part to actually visit the basis of these franchises to get a better understanding of what obtains on the ground. And I think that those visits were quite helpful in us understanding what facilities and amenities were available and what the operations look like and the shortcomings in terms of a high performance operation. So while we did not make that overall health check, definitely in terms of getting that understanding of the franchise mm-hmm. operations, it was very successful.
4341790, that's the number. And you can also send WhatsApp to 2534679. In fact, they're coming in. And there's one for Johnny. Johnny, when does the Honorable Desmond Haynes, when does this contract end? That's one coming in, Johnny.
Same answer to the question, same question last time I was on your show, Andrew. It's the 30th of June, 2024. But I thought Miles was an opening batsman in T20 cricket, but I think he just played a test match, and I still haven't answered Philo's question that I've now forgotten what it was, subject to my age.
I can refresh your mic,
Johnny. I wouldn't want to be so rude as to not acknowledge Philo's question and at least give him my attention to answer it.
Yeah. Well, either on the show or five. Okay, no, fine. I know about the strategic plan, but I just want to write it down. When does the contract end, Johnny? Can you answer the question? Desmond Haynes' contract.
JUNE 30.
Okay.
And that's of the year 2024.
Okay, good, fine. Thank you very much indeed. Yes, Philo.
Yeah, I asked Johnny the strategic plan that was approved over the weekend. What is it? And also, Johnny, a second question. Marketing. What is happening with marketing of West Indies cricket? I know that Dominic has moved on to marketing the World Cup for ICC. What is happening with the return of West Indies cricket, with the World Cup, and also with us going to England for the series in July?
Yeah, so first question. In terms of the strategic plan, we're going to make some announcements tomorrow, but also over the next few weeks and months. This plan is very much going to be one that isn't going to be published, printed, and stuck in a drawer to collect dust and re-looked at in 4 years' time. We want it very much to be a plan that evolves. And I think, you know, the last plan was very much about getting, in contextual terms, cricket West Indies house in order. I think this plan very much looks at the next layer down. How do we invest in the high performance system underneath West Indies cricket? If we look back at some of the achievements of the last plans, we've now got an asset in Coolidge Cricket Ground, both from a cricket perspective and obviously an asset on the balance sheet. It's wholly owned, no debt. We've got the two academies now launched for the men and the women. And what we're now looking at is how do we, as Miles suggests, how do we restructure the franchise system? And I guess in headline terms, that's probably taking more of a direct control in the high performance activities of the franchises as Cricket West Indies and taking much more of a direct leadership role there. But in terms of the strategic plan, we're looking at six strategic pillars. Some ones that have been there before. So from cricket, we're looking at elite and high performance. We're definitely looking at cricket development and participation, which is a big area where, you know, particularly under COVID, we had 2 years of virtually no cricket being played in schools at clubs. And so, you know, we need to supercharge that level of the cricket system, as Basil spoke to earlier, because it was the one that was most adversely affected when cricket couldn't be played during the pandemic. And then a new one that I don't think we've ever really tackled before, and I definitely view as part of our leadership role in Cricket West Indies, and one that we we cannot do without key stakeholder support, which is facilities and infrastructure. If you look at the gap analysis of our cricket system, our facilities and infrastructure is way, way, way below where it needs to be. And we really want to start to address that in a strategic way. I think it's always been overwhelming for Cricket West Indies to think about how they would do that. But my view is that we need to take a leadership role on that. We need to work with both the public and private sector. We need to show best practices. We need to do education and training. We need to have assist with procurement of the best services and the best minimum standards and plans. And clearly, Coolidge Cricket Ground gives us a great opportunity there for us to use that venue as a blueprint of best practice from not just how you build facilities and infrastructure, but you know, the biggest concern I have is how you maintain them and how you keep them world class. So that's a new one. So they're the three strategic pillars that I would say under the cricket umbrella. And then in terms of finance and fans, we know that fans, the more engaged fans we have, the more fans we have around the world, we're going to drive the commercial returns. And so we very much put fan engagement and global visibility of the West Indies brand under that finance and fan umbrella, along with commercial and financial, which underpins all of this. You can't do anything if you're in financial crisis and you don't have cash to fund all the programs that you want. And then all of that is built on a strong foundation of and structure of governance, of good corporate governance, of transparency, of world-class standards off the field. So that in a nutshell is our six strategic pillars. Mm-hmm. We're looking to, in the last plan where we made the most amount of progress was where we aligned best our human resources, our budgets and finances, and technology. And so what we're looking to do across all those six pillars is make sure that we've got the right people who can be held accountable to deliver those objectives and plans. Mm-hmm. We make sure we put enough funding and budget so they can achieve those goals. And then ultimately, in terms of just creative thinking and using technology, we know we have to do that in a way that almost no other board in the world has to do because of our unique situation. So that in a sort of, you know, trying to play a T20 innings, not a test match, that's the simplest way to articulate it. But across those six initiatives, we're going to be launching very clear action plans. The biggest weakness that I know Philo will agree with me of the last plan was we were too silent on it. We didn't report on it enough. We didn't publish it enough. We didn't go around the Caribbean talking about it enough. Mm. And certainly one of the things that we're looking to do, because we want the plan to evolve, is always be open to new ideas, to new thinking. One of the first major forms of engagement we're going to do is take up the offer by the Honourable Prime Minister in Trinidad and Tobago, who's holding a cricket symposium in April, and actually make a formal presentation of this plan to the CARICOM leaders and be very clear as to how we think the governments can support us in this plan. Obviously, we're hoping as well that they'll have ideas, not just about how they can help us, but how we can move forward with our cricket. Mm-hmm. So again, we're looking for lots of collaboration and you know, I would say over the next 3 months, we're going to be launching a series of action plans around those six pillars. We've purposely not put women's cricket in there because when we talk about all of those cricket things, we're talking about men cricket, male cricket and female cricket. And we want to have that at all levels of our system. And there's some very exciting plans that I don't want to steal Miles' thunder in terms of what we're looking to do. But there's lots of things that we would have spoken about on the show, fans would have spoken to us about, stakeholders would have spoken to us about, and we tried to encapsulate all of that in this plan because we've done it in-house for the first time ever. So we've not paid highly paid consultants. We've used cricket expertise to do it. We've spoken to players, administrators, prime ministers, ministers. We've done probably 6 months of engagement on this to try and get it into a framework where we've prioritised the key areas. And as I say, I think it's those six pillars, but really obviously enhancing the work that we've done at Cricket West Indies level, but really looking at that level below in terms of the franchises and territorial boards. And the other thing we're looking to do is obviously to go deeper into the grassroots and participation. So it's a pretty comprehensive plan. It very much feeds into the ICC plan, which is to strengthen, grow and protect. And one of the failures of this plan, in my opinion, will be if we don't have very quickly 6 territorial board strategic plans, and as importantly, 6 territorial cricket development plans that are clear, can equally be articulated, communicated and discussed, so that everyone in the region can get behind them. Because we do know that when we plan and when we unite and come together, we can actually achieve our goals on and off the field. And that's exactly what we're looking to do. And it's been a major, major focus of the organisation, and we'll continue to do it. And we will make sure, and we want our board of directors to hold us accountable to make sure on every single board meeting there's a strategic plan update where we're reporting against our KPIs in terms of how we're tracking and where the challenges are. And we also, through more public consultation, want our fans to hold us accountable on our plan and what we're trying to do, as well as come up with their own ideas and suggestions. So, sorry, I've drifted into a 50-over game, so I'm going to shut up before I'm playing Red Bull cricket.
No, that's fine. Okay, let's take a call, heading to 7 o'clock in the country. Can we take a call, Ronnie? We can. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good evening, Mr. Mason, and good evening to your panel.
Good evening to you, sir.
Right, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Okay. Now, there's a discussion yourself and I had some time ago, and what I'm going to say now is going to be centered around that prior discussion we had some time ago. Now, there was the unveiling of the monument for Sir Charles yesterday, etc. I would step back, and you could recall, and you gave a perspective on it, when I said we had the 3 Ws, and the 92, and left one, and languished, and then eventually the 93rd. We had the 2 inseparable opening batsmen, Greenidge and Haynes. Inseparable, you knight one, and you leave the other to languish. Then eventually you've done such thing. Now, with this one last night, I can't for the life of me understand when these 3 Ws are inseparable, the 2 opening batsmen are inseparable, you've got the 2 bowlers inseparable, how you can get Zane, somebody endorsed, 2 and leave it 1, 1 and leave it 1, 1 and leave it 1. Who would be overseeing this, and how can it be justified? What mistake could be made? How you get the detachment done is beyond me. I am not pretty. I play successful at pretense. I cannot pretend. So I say what I say with serious analysis. I'm not going to be indignant, but I say what I got to say in my observation. It is unacceptable when you look at it for what it is worth. They've all merited their slot and their whatever, but then how you could discriminate. So
yeah, well, more will come. I'm sure that the BCA and those responsible certainly working on that, and of course, I expect that people will be given their due. So don't you worry about it. It will certainly happen. Thanks for your contribution. All right, we're joined by Dr. Kishore Shallow as well, the president of Cricket West Indies. But let me come back to you, Johnny, in relation to a couple of housekeeping matters. Media department, I note with interest that, I don't know. Do you have a media department? Because, I mean, you know, Mr. Bartlett has left. Philip Spooner is no longer with you. Nazir is leaving at the end of the month. And, of course, you talked about communication just now, Johnny. Communication is so vitally important. How are you going to sort this out? We need to get information out, Johnny. Where's Johnny?
Yeah, we sent 2 press releases today, 1 yesterday. We'll be sending more out tomorrow. But I've made my views clear very, very much on this show. I don't think our media and PR and comms has been good enough. That's not criticism necessarily of the team that we had, but we're looking to make big changes in the way that we go about how we communicate, both from our teams, of which we now have 11 that go on the road and play within the region, and how we report more generally from a CWI perspective. So we're going to be making a big restructure and change within the media and comms department, which I think is overdue. We're going to be, as I said earlier, utilising technology in a much more consistent manner in order how we can distribute news much quicker and in a way in which fans want to digest it, which isn't already always the, you know, 500 word press release. And we need to use that technology. So I think, yeah, in due course, we'll be making some long-term decisions and restructuring. In the short term, we'll make some short-term signings to ensure that we can continue to service fans, commercial partners, and continue with being as transparent as we can with our plans. But yeah, we've got people in place to ensure that press releases will go out and information will flow.
I see. Now, earlier, just before, I know that with the president coming, it's good to see him on the show. I'm sure that his good friend, Dr. Ford, will certainly have some questions for him. You talked about your finances being better. So therefore, I would imagine that the outstanding payments you will look after, because my understanding is that there's still some money outstanding to cricketers. No payment in 2024 and the 50 over last year and the prize money. Can you comment on that, Johnny?
No, I think all the Super 50, CG United Super 50 money has been paid. So we're up to date in terms of
wonderful
Super 50 payments. Yeah, look, we I'm sure you've been looking at our balance sheet in the accounts and seeing that the money's owed to related parties. That's a studious accountant that you are.
Well done, John.
As we enter a good year, as I said, we're looking to tidy up all of our affairs. It's been a very long journey for us. Very grateful of our, particularly those territorial boards and local associations that have, that have carried some legacy debt and payments. We were looking to pay those all off in the next six months or so. So, that will be a big injection into our cricket system.
Is Courtney Brown sorted?
Sorry, Andy?
Is Courtney Brown sorted in LD Baptist?
As I said on the last time on the show, I believe they were paid in full last year.
Well, you didn't check it? You can't be telling me you believe, Johnny. Come on. You must check it.
I know they were paid in full.
Okay, right. Lovely. Wonderful. Wonderful, Johnny. Well, it's just that the lawyer came on, Mr. Lois West, in a program after that and said that was not the case. But anyhow, you said it had been paid, so we certainly believe you. Well, Dr. Ford, your good friend, is on the show. Dr. Shallow, looking very young. He's looking as though he's put on a bit of weight as well. Your cheeks are getting a bit fat. You've not been on this show for such a long time. And fellow Wallace has been barking. Where is the president of Cricket West Indies? It's good to have you on the show. And it's my pleasure to have you on the show. How are you doing, my friend?
Very well, Andrew. Thanks for the invitation. I can't remember the last time I was invited.
You hear that?
But, Johnny has been in the program for some time. So he's covering, I guess, for Cricket West Indies. He had a role on Hola. So, I know we have been in constant communication with you. And as usual, we are very accessible to Andrew Mason. Pleasure being here as usual.
Right. Now, Dr. Ford, first question for the president. I'm sure that he's your good friend. You meet in his box, Doc.
Doc? Good night, Dr. Shallow. Well, I guess my first question is if you can shed some light on what was the outcome of the governance, initiatives that you would have made, and which ones made it and which ones didn't?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't necessarily remember the details off my head, but just before I go there, I wanted to take this opportunity to congratulate Sir Charlie Griffith. The erection of the statue yesterday, I think, was certainly, as I think the recent caller said, it was a merit, and certainly something that I'm sure Barbadians and cricket lovers all across the world celebrated yesterday. Commendations to Barbados Cricket Association for leading the initiative as well. Andrew, you didn't even give me an opportunity to say hello to my friend Basil.
Oh, Basil. Butcher.
I haven't seen him in a while. I didn't know he was going to be on the program.
Good man.
I got a question to follow up with the president. Now he's the president on something. I spoke to him when he was vice president.
Okay.
We have 50 minutes, so hopefully enough time.
Yes.
And I'm sure Big Phil has a few questions himself too.
Yes,
so
Big Phil.
We'll try and be as concise as possible.
Sure.
Yes. But Dr. Ford, I mean, we put forward, I think it was 7 resolutions to the board. What we decided from, I think, September last year as a board that, and this was an advice from an expert in corporate governance, that we sort of pick what we believe are the low-hanging fruits. And we use that approach, a phased approach, to achieving, you know, a significant majority of the recommendations from the Webby's report eventually. Because as you know, these recommendations pretty much they are a compilation of what have been produced over the years from multiple reports. And we do believe that quite a few, if not all, are relevant. And so our approach last AGM, following a series of consultations between stakeholders, the 6 territorial boards, and other key persons in the cricket landscape. And out of the 7, I think some 5 were approved, met favor with the board, well, with the shareholders. And there were 2 that, and I could probably go into the 2 that were not passed.
Mm.
One was to have the term limits for the office of president. That was one that was not accepted by the AGM. And the other was to extend the term of the president and the vice president from 2 years to 3 years.
Mm.
Right. So those were the 2 not accepted yesterday. Sorry, on Saturday at the AGM. But there were some other 5. I expect that maybe at the right time we'll probably release once our internal council and so on have gone through the process of incorporating them in our constitution or acts. We'll be able to share them with the public.
Well, you did say it was disappointing that the 2 didn't make it, but the 2 seem to be rather conflicting because you want to limit it, yet you want to make the terms bigger. So it's equivalent to having 3 terms. What was the rationale behind having those 2 together?
Not conflicting at all. And they were separate. They're not conflicting. They're 2 significantly different things, Dr. Ford. So one is moving from a 2-year period, which currently exists, as you know.
Right.
And we thought it was best, and this was a recommendation from Webby, to increase it to 3 years. As you know, in football, it's 4 years. Some of the territorial boards have moved to 4 years, actually, right?
Yeah.
And the other resolution was to put put term limits so there could be no, I think the president could not serve more than 3 consecutive terms, which would be 9 years if it was moved. In the current term that exists, it would be no more than 6 years. That also exists. Term limit also exists in some of the territorial boards already. Mm. And in the sports industry actually. So they weren't unique, and as we said, we thought they were low-hanging fruits. What we have, and I'm sure every person suddenly on this platform here and our Zoom platform who interacting, and along with most of our listeners now, they are well aware of the politics in West Indies cricket. To have an election every other year, right? If I am very motivated by remaining in office, the good politician would say I probably need to start campaigning from now, right? That does not, it doesn't incentivize leaders to focus on the priority, which is West Indies cricket and the advancement of West Indies cricket, as opposed to survival, right? So unless you have a president who is willing to prioritize West Indies cricket over self, then you're going to potentially have every other year a campaign leading up to the election. And we thought, at least some of us agreed with Webby's team Rabies Committee, that maybe extending this to 3 years would probably help us mitigate against the risk of a two-year election.
Well, I meant they were self-defeating in regard to, let's say, they both had passed and you had limited it to 3 terms, you would end up with 9 years before with shorter terms, it would have been 6, as you said. But the thing is, I guess it has to do with what I guess you guys, the report would have determined what's the, how long does it take for a leader to get burnt out? But the thing is, if one, let's say the longer terms had won over and the time limit didn't win, you would have 3 terms. And let's say somebody did 3-4 terms, then it would even be longer and the person would be more burnt out. So that was the only thing. I was wondering if it wouldn't have been smarter to just come with the one that was more important and then maybe do the other one at a later date, since they both dealt with term limits in some regard. If there wasn't a more important one that you could have chosen to add on.
There were 2 separate resolutions, Doc. So the members could have decided to support one and not the other.
Mm. I see.
All right. They Basil, were totally divorced.
Basil, any questions for the president or Miles or Johnny?
Yeah, I got a question for both Miles and the president. Miles, to comment on these some things I got here written down.
Yes.
Well, women's cricket for one is very near and dear to my heart. I've been involved in women's cricket for over 15 years, very intimately. And I follow, although I live in the United States, I follow women's cricket in the Caribbean, probably more than the people in the Caribbean. I went in Guyana, for example, when they even stream in the intercounty, I watching the women on the 19 and so on play. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my question, because I heard Johnny talk about the overall strategic plan, but in all of us can agree, women's cricket is on life support, so to speak. Ooh. And it needs from ground all the way up, right? Because I could talk for Guyana more intimately because I know about Guyana's situation, where we don't even have a single women's team.
Right.
When these women go home from this tournament here, I don't know when they can play cricket again.
Right.
And I got to give kudos to a club in Georgetown, Transport, because a young lady, Latchman, she plays with their youth team. They have developed her, right? But most of the women, because I talked to many of the women plays in Guyana, and when they go home, they ain't got nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so don't see them improving, right? And on top of that, I just want to add something that goes along with that.
Right.
And I'd raised this with Dr. Shallow when I met him in Florida a couple of years ago about developmental coaches. Because we have we West Indies players, when you look at them versus their counterparts around the world, you see a guy from Australia, England, India, Pakistan, what have you. Then when you see him again, he's an improved player. But we don't see that with our players. And one of the challenges I've been told is when they return home, they don't have the resources to help them to work on things that they should need to work on to improve. So when we see them again, they're improved player. And I raised that with Dr. Shallow about development coaches, a la what happens in the NBA today, since you got a one year and out in college.
Mm-hmm.
NBA teams now have a plethora of developmental coaches to fix that gap. So if you can comment on that.
Okay. So I would start with women's. And I would say that I agree with you in terms of the support that we have for women cricketers in the territories. And that is one of those items that we have as part of our strategic plan. And that is to ensure that you know there is a support system for these cricketers when they get back to their territories. We know that not all territories have a domestic women's tournament, and I hope that would be one of the items that should come out in any strategic plans coming out of the territorial boards. But definitely we want to have coaches on the ground in the territories, have a domestic women's tournament, and I hope that would be one of the items that should come out in any strategic plans coming out of the territorial boards. But definitely we want to have coaches on the ground in the territories that are specifically allocated to support women's cricketers. So local senior players, local under-19s. Obviously, you know, we have a West Indies women's under-19 team. We have just discussed the start of a under-16s pathway development plan, starting within the territories to try to get women players starting the game at an earlier level. And of course, at the top, we have put initiatives in place for pay parity all the way in 2027. So there would be increases in match fees and you know, a lot of financial incentives. And hopefully persons looking at that, heading in that direction, would see the women's game as, you know, a very lucrative opportunity for them. And that could also help us to start getting some interest or generating some interest at the earlier ages, as, you know, it would be a viable career option for them. In terms of the development of the coaches, I think again it's a lot about having support, and that is one of the key areas that we looked at under the franchise system. So what we expect from the franchise system is a high performance environment where the players, the key pillar in that system is on individual player development, right? And that is exactly mm-hmm. what we would be trying to align from the West Indies level all the way down into the franchise level, and to ensure that there is support for, say, where West Indies under-19 players, when they come back to their territories, they can form a part of that high performance environment. And so it's, as I said, it's a lot about alignment. I think we have, for the men in particular, I think we have the resources available, and we can do a lot more to support especially our elite players. But I do agree that we still would need to do some more in terms of the pathway development for the territorial teams.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but we are working on it.
Let's pause.
Just
hold on, Basil. I'm going to take a commercial break and come back to you with a question for the president.
All right.
We got to make some money, otherwise we can't have Dr. Shallow and my good friend on the show. Just close it down. Mason and Guest Broughton Association with our good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Yeah, Baz, your question to the president.
Yeah, Dr. Shallow, West Indies were the first two, we won the first two World Cups, 1975 and 1979. And you're not to be blamed for this. I'm just bringing this up as an idea. And in those two teams, we've had a couple World Cups in the region. And to date, we have never celebrated them. Mm. I mean, we lost two people. Pretty much all of them are alive, barring Keith Boyce and Roy Fredericks. And I would like to see... Right. We finally acknowledge these guys on the world stage because to many of this current generation, they're just names. And a lot of our young people don't know their shoulders upon which they stand on. And I would love to see these guys honored as a collective during this upcoming World Cup in the Caribbean.
Yeah, Basil, I mean, I can't promise you're going to be at this World Cup, right? But what I could tell you is that it is certainly something on the horizon, on the agenda of Cricket West Indies. In fact, I have had conversations with legends, a couple of those persons on those teams, and also regional leaders, president, prime ministers, who are very willing to support the initiative. All right, so it is something that I believe we must do, right? It's just a matter of when we do it, hopefully before the end of this year.
Wonderful. Now, let me come back to you, Miles, and this one I'm going to throw to all three of you. We saw Kemar Roach in the regional tournament pelt. You saw that? Now, I want to know if that is a concern of the president, the CEO, and the director of cricket. Let me start with you, Miles.
Andrew, as you would know, there is some measurement involved in determining whether a player pelted. So I would say that I saw a video that indicated a suspect action. And a report did come in on that. The report indicated that it was an attempted slower delivery, and it was the only one for the match. But it was indeed an area of concern for us, and we do plan to have a discussion with Kemar. But until we have that discussion, you know, I wouldn't want to comment anymore on that.
I'm just interested in the report. You said that the report said what? Can you repeat what the report said? I mean, I saw
it was an attempted slow ball off cutter. That is what was reported.
So the report didn't say. So the report didn't say it was an illegal. It was an illegal delivery. I mean, it was a pelt. The report.
No, well, it spoke to a suspect action, which is as much as the umpires could say without a further investigation. Yes.
President Shallow, I mean, does that concern you?
Yeah, what I'll say, Andrew, is that Kemar has a very good reputation internationally, and I mean, I don't think we have had any reason to question that he plays in the spirit of the game. But I leave the umpires and the other officials to address that matter. But the truth is, with limited time, Andrew, I much prefer to focus on all the other things. I only have another 31 minutes. I don't want to spend that few minutes. And let me tell you, right, when I look at, and I spoke to a couple of persons, right, who, you know, not very often you get commendations and positive sentiments when you're in this role. And I have heard quite a few positive sentiments around the current first class season, right? It's quite competitive, the number of centuries, 5 wicket hauls, you know, quite competitive, especially at this, after 5 rounds, 2 more rounds to go. You know, you probably have about four teams potentially could be the champion, right? I mean, that is encouraging. And this is feedback from players, from fans, and you know, even corporate Caribbean. And, you know, in addition to the first class season, we have a women's series playing, which just concluded, right? We have the under-15 boy just about to start. I mean, it's a lot of cricket. And in all that taking place, we're still planning for the biggest event in the Caribbean, probably ever, the World Cup. So, you know, I would much prefer to focus on you know, sensitizing the public about some of those developments, because a lot of things are happening off the field. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of areas that we have identified, Johnny Miles and board and senior management have identified, that we could be doing much better. We trust that with time, we are going to address these different areas. But, you know, I don't mind getting quiz on some of these areas, Andrew. We limited time. Sorry for rushing you.
Yeah, fine.
Andrew, if I could just come in, just with the subject of pelting, I won't be able to walk in the office tomorrow without getting pelted if I don't respond to Basil's question about honouring the 75 and 79 team. Because when, on a previous show, a caller asked me, and I said, you know, it certainly was our intention, as the president said, you know, on the 50-year anniversary next year to do that. Everyone in the office involved in the 2007 World Cup reminded me that at Sabina Park, all the winners of 79 and 75 were invited to Sabina Park and were paraded at the opening fixture of that World Cup. So we have obviously done it. We could never do it enough, in my mind. And as the president rightly says, we'll certainly be doing it on the 50-year anniversary next year, but I will get pelted if I don't just tell people in 2007 for the World Cup, the winners of 75 and 79 were invited to the opening game at Sabina Park to rightly be to be honoured and celebrated.
President, just before we go to Philo, in terms of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, plans are going well. I know you've got some big matches there coming up. Things are going well in terms of preparation.
I much prefer to speak to the region, though. You know, some people might tell you I spend more time in the other islands than St. Vincent these days. But from the update I've received from the World Cup management, operations, renovations are progressing well across the six countries in the Caribbean. Fortunately, I've been to Annisville recently. I saw firsthand, I've witnessed the tremendous work taking place there. I've also gotten report from the other countries. And similarly, I mean, it's major investment happening across the six countries. Right there in Barbados, I'm sure Andrew, you and Dr. Ford passing across there would have absorbed those developments. Mm-hmm. And I want to publicly thank the government for coming on board with this work up in such a major way and investing in these facilities. And not only the playing facilities, but also the training facilities, which are obviously legacy projects of this World Cup. So forget about, you know, the economic boost that we are going to get from this World Cup. From a cricket perspective, which I'm sure Miles is jumping and celebrated, you know, just to have these facilities readily available for players after the World Cup is going to do us tremendous good going forward.
434-1790, Philo.
Hi, thanks, Andrew. Dr. Shallow, you could update us about the liaison officers for the teams, the roles that they have been filled. You know, obviously, they've been an adult. There are a number of persons have been contacting me about these roles, and they've applied but got no feedback from CWI. Can you bring us up to date on what is happening with those roles? You spoke about the World Cup. Is there anything that ICC is going to be bringing to the West Indies in relation to this World Cup that you talk about the private facilities that we will have that would be viable, you know, like giving away stuff? Because I saw in the last World Cup in India, they were giving away equipment and stuff like that. I'll speak about having a women's league, but we need numbers. In order to have a women's league, we need to have numbers, and we need to have the numbers at a young age of for the girls playing cricket. You cannot wait till a girl gets 17 or 18 and ask her to play a cover drive, because the hand-eye coordination is already gone. So we need to hone in on those skills. Is there anything at all that is going to be done that can help lure these children in? And I asked about the marketing as well. Johnny, it's going off on a different path. About the marketing of our tour to England, how important is that after this big World Cup?
The president?
Yeah. I'm going to give the first question to Johnny. I don't get involved with recruitment of staff, and that is obviously the World Cup. And Johnny would explain it better than me.
Johnny.
In terms of the... Johnny, so you could answer that in the end, right? In terms of the there's a legacy program, and just like how we have legacy projects, which is the facility, the infrastructure, and so on, we do expect to have legacy programs, which is incorporating especially our young cricketers, not even necessarily cricketers yet, but those young ones who have interest in the game, young boys and girls, just like we have seen traditionally with them coming out of during the break and playing their little cricket and so on, that we believe would help us to you know, make the game more popular, to increase the popularity of the sport. And you know, so we certainly hope to achieve that at the conclusion of this World Cup. In terms of marketing, we I mean, all our not necessarily all our eggs are in one basket here, but our focus is currently on the World Cup, and we have placed most of our resources with that, because we have to deliver the best cricket World Cup ever. There's absolutely no doubt about that. We are not going to compromise that in any way. However, the team is working hard on what is a South Africa tour coming up just before the World Cup, so you expect to see some promotion for that as well. England, we understand fully well that they're going to be marketing that tournament, especially I expect the test series, that first test at Lord's, is going to be probably one of the biggest series between West Indies and England in a while. Certainly with us coming off that series win, sorry, that series draw in Australia, that, I mean, after how many years, Philo? I'm sure you have the years. I can't remember it now, but since we won a test in Australia, but you can imagine 27 years. So
almost double our age.
You could imagine Lord's is going to be filled for that, yes, for that match, right? Yes. And of course, we have the series coming up later in the year, England coming to the West Indies, where by then we'll probably be able to put in 3 good months of marketing that series before, and then Bangladesh the back end of the year. So we are working and we are planning the entire year out, but all our focus, our main focus, significant majority of our efforts are now geared towards the World Cup, as you would appreciate. Johnny?
Mm-hmm. Johnny?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the World Cup, most of the central roles have now been filled, and most of the local roles have been as well. There's still a few local roles that we are continuing to recruit. And again, there's been a very transparent and robust process across all the recruitments. What I would say is we've been, I would say pleasantly, albeit it's a massive challenge, surprised by the interest of people wanting to be involved in the World Cup. We've been inundated with application forms and CVs from across the Caribbean and actually from around the world, both from our diaspora and others wanting to get involved in the running of this World Cup. But yeah, most of the roles are now filled in the central headquarters here in Antigua, and most of the local organising committees now have a full complement of local staff. There still are some roles to be filled, and obviously, you know, with the amount of hundreds and hundreds of applications, we fortunately can't necessarily respond to every single one or offer opportunities to everyone, but it's been, I think, one of the best things. And hopefully what we're doing is, you know, we're all about building capacity, and hopefully people who do get involved in the World Cup can stay in cricket at whatever level and continue to contribute, because we need more people throughout the system helping us move it forward. I think in terms of the marketing, particularly for the England series, as the president says, you know, we currently hold the Richards Botham Trophy. We're looking to defend it. Ticket sales in the UK have been, you know, really, really strong. I think all 4 days of the first, or the first 4 days of all 3 test matches are now pretty much sold out. And I think, yeah, we're certainly planning a much longer preparation period in England. We all know the conditions there, and those players not involved in the World Cup will be heading out to England several weeks before that opening 4-day game at Beckenham, let alone the first test match at Lords, to acclimatise, get used to the conditions and prepare and get ready for that first ball, first session on Wednesday at Lords. And yeah, we're looking again, as I said, in terms of how we're addressing the media team, we're looking at how we can get more access behind the scenes into that series and to create more digital footage for all of our fans around the world to understand actually how dedicated our test team are, how meticulous Andre Coley and his coaching staff are in preparing for this series that pretty much started, as Miles will be able to tell you better than me, within hours of Gabba finishing, because you know, the team analysts and everyone have been looking at this England tour in terms of getting the strategy right, getting the focus right, and then matching that to the selection, because it's a hugely important tour. We've got to continue that momentum from the Gabba, even though it's been a long break. And our status in world cricket, whenever we play test cricket, is in the shop window, and we need to make sure that particularly when we play test cricket, that our status as one of the founding members of the ICC, of one of the biggest brands in world cricket, you know, even when we win, we've competed, and we've, you know, as a team, they've worn the maroon cap with pride, and that's a really important aspect to our cricket that we should never lose sight on, that every time the test team play, the world is watching, and the world as we've seen with the response to the victory in the Gabba, partly because everyone loves watching Australia lose, but also more importantly because everyone loves West Indies winning.
Johnny, how many
players? And Andrew, Andrew, I was just going to say, I'll be surprised if Philo is not there at Lord's on the fourth day. Well, cheer on whether Craig Brathwaite or Shamar Joseph.
President, I plan to go down to Kent to watch that game, and I'm hoping to get to Lord's to watch the first day because I'm scheduled to be in the Caribbean in mid July, so the second weekend in July I'm supposed to be back in Barbados, but I'm planning to be at Lord's that first day. But I want to go to Kent and also watch them because there's a big interest, Mr. President. I must tell you, a lot of people are going to go to Kent and support West Indies cricket team, and I want the members of that squad to acknowledge the people, to support them, and I hope that they don't turn their backs or shun them. It's very important that they show support to the spectators who will come and support them, not only at Kent but also at Lord's and also in Birmingham and in the three Test matches. There's a big stir here in the Caribbean in England.
I'm sure, Andrew. Just before you move on, right? And sure. The question of employment, right? For the World Cup, and Johnny could give the exact figure if he has it, but we have well over 100 persons already employed across the region for the World Cup. And when we speak of the economic impact of the World Cup, it's not only when the teams arrive or during that month of June. But we have had persons already engaged full-time and part-time, you know, and this obviously is, I mean, we can't speak of the value that has on our economy in the Caribbean. So, you know, overall, it's a major opportunity for us. And so far, I'm quite happy with the progress that we have making.
Miles, two questions for you. How many players are we going to be taking to England first? The squad?
15-man squad.
15-man. No consideration for 16? You seem to be very skimpy in that.
Well, the case hasn't been made as yet. So generally, when the panel meets, if they have a recommendation for a 16 player, they will make that justification, and then we will look at whether or not the logistics and so on will allow it. But that case has not been made.
Well, of course, if you want to take...
Still only 11 players, Andrew, in a cricket team.
So 15. So for the moment, 15 players are to be going, right, Johnny? You know what? You know you're not in that.
Tonight. Yeah, and still 11 players will take the field, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're going to take Roach and hold it, then you need to take a development player. You know, I would want to recommend to you, Miles, that you take more than 15, if you can take 16. Because we've got one or two young fast bowlers. I know that selectors may want to pick Roach and Holder, who made himself available for Barbados. And, you know, I suppose maybe in there, if Seals is looking good, then you may very well find a situation where possibly a young fast bowler may not make the trip. So I want to recommend on this show that you at least take 16 players. Now, the other question for you, Miles, with the head coach...
Andrew, just let me come in on that because I think it's an important point.
Yes.
You know, as the President said, we are now playing so much cricket that actually during the England tour, we've got an A-team series against South Africa, which is also really important because of the context of effectively playing five test matches on the bounce. We've got three against England and then two immediately afterwards in the Caribbean. So it's important that we have a pool of players that are ready playing Red Bull cricket at a high standard should we get any injuries that can come in, and should any players lose form, we've got an 18 tour to allow the selectors to pick players who are in form. So again, just wanted to remind you and viewers, listeners, that you know we've got a very important test series in England, but we've also got an 18 tour, and again we saw the value of that 18 tour to South Africa last year as part of the preparation of the test series that we had in Australia. So I think I just wanted to make that point around the fact that we are playing more cricket now, and that the 18 program that we're investing heavily in is a really important part of our cricket ecosystem. And I just want to ask Dr. Ford if he could also get Philo a nice box ticket for Lords if he's going to be there, because I wouldn't want to see Philo stuck in the hot English sun when Dr. Ford had access to the box tickets in world cricket.
Johnny, I can send you my address in England, and you can send it off. No problem. I know my tickets. Lords.
My tickets won't be of the standard of Dr. Ford's, but I'll happily give you one.
No, but any ticket is good for me. I just want to see that cricket. That is going to be important. I take that Johnny be on a good thing with this test match, and I hope that the guys can continue that momentum. And that's why the support of the crowd is going to be very important.
I see. And again, back to you, Miles. Will Haynes and the head coach pick this team to England? Because you said that the head coach and Desmond Haynes will pick the World Cup squad. Will Haynes and the head coach pick the team to England as well? Can you confirm that?
All right. Yes, Andrew. Yes, that will be the case.
Okay. Dr. Ford, you've been very quiet in the background. Anything for your good friend? Because I understand you and Dr. Shallow are bosom buddies. Is that true, Dr. Ford?
I am friends of many. I'm a peacemaker, a diplomat. but I'm going off at a tangent a bit. I know the World Cup, we're working on it, and we can pick apart if we're ready and if the grounds are ready and if the grass is growing and all that. But there's a bigger question that I want to ask Dr. Shallow and to a lesser extent, Johnny. As franchise cricket grows around the world, do you ever worry about the specter of international cricket becoming a second and weaker version of cricket as the franchise market grows and the economy grows and they start squeezing out time and the availability of tours and the availability of players? Are administrators of nations in the ICC, presiding over their own marginalization by franchise cricket in some way, by just making all these windows and allowing it to grow and to flourish and to expand at a faster rate than the ICC expands its own product?
Yeah, and that for it is a brilliant question. It is a concern of many. This is one of the positives of cricket now. Globally, it's probably growing faster than any other sport, right? So while that is positive, it also means managing players' workload, managing, the number of franchise leagues popping up across the globe, and so on. How do you ensure that international cricket, ICC events, these bilateral series, especially tests, remain relevant? And discussions are taking place at the ICC director's level, at the CEO level, and Johnny would comment as well. Recently, at our board meeting a couple of weeks ago, that was on the agenda, and we all realized that we need to work closer, as in the respective countries have to work closer together with bilaterals as well, ensuring that there's windows in there for our players to recuperate and all of that, because while we want to ensure that the sport grows, we also do not want to dilute the product of cricket, right, regardless of the format. And so I think this is only going to be addressed when all the countries are speaking together, planning their schedules in a responsible way and working closely with ICC, because of course they have all those major events as well that help us all with our finances. So it's a relevant topic. I would say it is topical, and it's something that we have to address pretty soon before it gets out of hand. Johnny, I think you probably want to elaborate on that.
Johnny, just before you elaborate, we got to take a commercial break because we're slightly behind. Let's take this and come right back to you. Mason and Guest, Broughton Association, with our good friends at ASFE, work around the best shot of the day.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want,
USA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, we got just about 9 minutes left of the show. Yes, Johnny?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think, I'd echo the sentiments of the president in terms of there is discussions ongoing at ICC level at both levels. And I think what has changed is that the impact of these leagues is now affecting two big boards and that of Cricket Australia and the England and Wales Cricket Board. I think Major League Cricket happening in July that has actually made some English-based players leave the English summer to go apply their trade overseas has been a big change in the thinking of the ECB. I think we saw that with some Australian players leaving the Big Bash to go and play in the ILT20. And then even a country like New Zealand who haven't really necessarily had the same issues and don't have their own franchise tournament. Their Super Smash is still owned by their states and run as a non-overseas player tournament. You know, they had the impact of having a weakened South Africa test team because of the SA20. So more of the bigger boards are being affected by franchise cricket. In some respects, it's by our own doing. Most of the franchise leagues are owned by and controlled by the full member board. So yes, it is something that's happening. We certainly don't underestimate the challenges, but I think what we're all pleased to see is that, you know, the impact of Test cricket, and when Test cricket's played at its best, it still has a huge audience, and people remember Test cricket more probably than any of these franchise competitions. But these franchise competitions are fantastic about giving players around the world an opportunity to earn unprecedented amounts of money and make, you know, what is a very short and uncertain career, you know, potentially a lucrative one that, you know, that can set them up for life. So, it's not all doom and gloom. And there are conversations, I think, as the president said, it's about finding balance and relevance. And that's certainly what we're striving to do.
I see. All right. We got, what, another 5 or so, just about 6 minutes left on the show. We got a call there as well, 441790. Can we take this call? We can. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
I think the person gave up on you.
Oh. All right. So sorry about that. No, in terms of just a couple of things before we end, I know that our fellow's got a question, but just to let listeners know that the finals of the GeForce Masters tournament is going to be BNOC versus UWI. That's on Saturday. I've been asked to make sure that the listeners know it starts at 12. And it's a 35 over a game for the old stages. Fellow used to play one time when he was here. So let's look forward to that. The BNOC up against UWI. The game is scheduled to be played on Saturday at the Foursquare Oval. Fellow, got 5 minutes left.
I just want to ask Johnny if CWI has sent off a congratulatory note to Sir Charles Griffith on the unveiling of that wonderful statue in his honour.
Mm. Yeah, we're in the process of doing that along with a contribution towards the cost. So, that's in the pipeline, and we're just working out exactly how much we can contribute.
But Johnny, where you get money is go fast. I understand.
Well, you know, Johnny, you're short on staff, because I may be wrong. But then you may tell me I may have to go to Instagram, but I haven't seen any press release in relation to Jamaica doing so well in the women's. Was there a press release on that, Johnny?
No, we don't issue press releases as often as we do, because, again, we cover it with social media. The games were live streamed, and we certainly celebrated and congratulated Jamaica on their double victory across all of our channels.
So,
to the icon that has
the answer is no.
We have not issued a traditional written press release to congratulate Jamaica. We use multimedia and modern technology to excite our fan in the moment,
right?
Which was on Sunday, as you know.
Final words,
Andrew.
Yes.
I have a question for both my
Yeah,
and Mr. President,
make it quick. Make it quick.
Yes. Because I heard Miles on the on another podcast when asked about the fitness in terms of being a criteria for selection, and I've heard Dr. Shallow several times talk about how important and he is a serious man on the fitness. So if that is no longer selection criteria, how are we going to go about making sure our players have world-class elite fitness? Because that is that continues to be a problem for both our men and women.
Miles?
Yes, well, we definitely have plans of implementing a new fitness policy. And as you mentioned, that fitness policy will no longer be tied to selection. But that is not to say that the importance of fitness has been diminished in any way. What we have now is a system where each franchise has a strength and conditioning coach and a physio. And so that means that every player at that franchise will have a very individualized strength and conditioning program that will constantly be asking them to progress. So what we have, what we are planning to go forward with is more along the lines of meeting the players where they are and putting a program in place that will help them to get them to where we need them to be, right? As opposed to an exclusionary policy.
Right. Okay. Gentlemen, time is very tight. I think we want to have the final word with the president. What do you have to say to the people of the Caribbean, President Shallow? We got the World Cup just around the corner. Ticket sales has apparently been going pretty well. What message on Mason and Guest do you have for the people of the region? You got 2 minutes.
Andrew, 1 year into the job, as you know, exactly 1 year, I think. And I think it's safe to say that we are making tremendous strides by all measurements. We have a long way to go. It's about putting in those, establishing a robust system, right, with some processes. And once we establish those things, we expect that all our different components and aspects of the game, that they're going to improve. I'm looking forward to the CARICOM Cricket Symposium next month. I think that affords us a great opportunity for all the stakeholders to come together and, you know, determine how collectively we could move West Indies cricket in the right direction. So hopefully we can come back at the end of next month, Andrew, and update you on that symposium. I think that certainly there's a high spirit, positive energy across the Caribbean about West Indies cricket. And, you know, we continue to say that we have to work together, you know, and that's the only way we are going to achieve our desired outcome, you know, which is obviously a stronger and more robust West Indies cricket. But Andrew, thanks for the opportunity today. We are happy to have a CWI program, and we welcome this in the future.
And even with CWI, I really want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. And of course, we really want to thank, of course, Miles Bascom for coming as well on the show. And of course, Johnny Grave for being very much a part of the show. And just finally to say that the Central Club, they're going to be having their 75th anniversary general meeting on March the 28th at Hoyts Village. And we are happy to promote that. Thanks to Robin Ford for inviting us. Just another housekeeping matter. Understand that the vice president, who's now the acting president of the Barbados Cricket Association, Mr. Calvin Hope. I'm told that the tender goes until March the 28th. I'm sure that somebody might have mentioned that to you, fellow. You know, he has been on leave, and our good friend Mr. Hope has been acting as president. We really want to hear from the Barbados Cricket Association what's really happening as far as Condé Riley's concerned. We have a situation where the vice president, who is now acting president, he is going to be in the job until March the 28th with a possible extension. Well, thanks, gentlemen, for coming on the show. We hope you enjoyed half as much as we enjoyed presenting to you. Andrew Mason, on behalf of the team, saying good night. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you
one. PSA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.